C.S. Lewis Part 4. The general rule which we have now pretty well established among them is that in all experiences which can make them happier or better, only the physical facts are real, while the spiritual elements are subjective. In all experiences which can discourage or corrupt them, the spiritual elements are the main reality, and to ignore them is to be an escapist. Your patient, properly handled, will have no difficulty in regarding his emotion at the sight of human entrails as a revelation of reality, and his emotion at the sight of happy children or fair weather as mere sentiment. Oh, to get one's teeth again into a Farinata, a Henry VIII, or even a Hitler! There was real crackling there, something to crunch, a rage, an egotism, a cruelty only just less robust than our own. It put up a delicious resistance to being devoured. The job of their tempters was first, or course, to harden these choices of the hellward roads into a habit by steady repetition. But then, and this was all important, to turn the habit into a principle the creature is prepared to defend. After that, all will go well. Nor, of course, must they ever be allowed to raise Aristotle's question, whether democratic behavior means the behavior that democracies like or the behavior that will preserve a democracy. For if they did, it could hardly fail to occur to them that these need not be the same. All is summed up in the prayer, which a young female human is said to have uttered recently, "O God, make me a normal 20th century girl." Thanks to our labors, this will mean increasingly, make me a minx, a moron, and a parasite. Allow no preeminence among your subjects. Let no man live who is wiser, or better, or more famous, or even handsomer than the mass. Cut them all down to a level, all slaves, all ciphers, all nobodies. All equals. The little stocks will now of themselves bite the tops off the big ones. The big ones are beginning to bite off their own in their desire to be like stocks. For democracy or the democratic spirit, diabolical sense, leads to a nation without great men, a nation mainly of subliterates, full of the cocksureness which flattery breeds on ignorance, and quick to snarl or whimper at the first sign of criticism. And that is what hell wishes every democratic people to be. Our need love for God is in a different position, because our need of Him can never end either in this world or in any other. But our awareness of it can, and then the need love dies too. The devil was sick, the devil a monk would be. There seems no reason for describing as hypocritical the short-lived piety of those whose religion fades away once they have emerged from danger, necessity, or tribulation. Why should they not have been sincere? They were desperate, and they held for help. Who wouldn't? Sometimes one sees a woman's girlhood, youth, and long years of her maturity, up to the verge of old age, all spent in tending, obeying, caressing, and perhaps supporting, a maternal vampire who can never be caressed and obeyed enough. Milton has expressed more when he fancies angelic creatures with bodies made of light, who can achieve total interpenetration, instead of our mere embraces. Charles Williams has said something of it in the words, "Love you? I am you." But an eros, a need, at its most intense, sees the object most intensely as a thing admirable in herself, important far beyond her relation to the lover's need. If we had not all experienced this, if we were mere logicians, we might boggle at the conception of desiring a human being, as distinct from desiring any pleasure, comfort, or service that human being can give.